Jewelry companies are front and center of the annual Christmas shopping advertising blitz. Don't tell me you haven't seen those romantic images of women cradling velvet boxes. It's all about desire. And author Asia Radin says that desire goes back centuries. It's part of who we are.
There's no more powerful statement than, I want. I want that. I want them. Even if it's an issue of survival, you still are driven by what you want and what you are compelled to take or have or maintain.
As Radin tells it, jewelry is the quintessential object of desire. And more than that, she says it's the perfect lens through which to view human history. Her book is called Stoned: Jewelry, Obsession, and How Desire Shapes the World. And she makes her case through the stories of eight noteworthy jewels, starting with the glass beads a Dutchman used to buy Manhattan from the Lenape Indians.
Most experts agree the deal really did go down, and it wasn't just glass beads. It was also buttons, which were made out of shell at the time, and trinkets. But there was a deed of sale for Staten Island, which they bought several days later under the exact same terms, and it still exists in a museum in Amsterdam, whereas the first one has been lost to history.
One of the values of this story is it gets at the idea of value, right? I think
exactly.
People look at this story through a modern lens and are dismissive of it, or as you say, see it through a lens of cultural guilt over America's legacy or Western legacy with Native Americans. But when you actually looked into glass beads and their value at that time, you found something interesting.
Yes. The value of those beads was famously calculated at $24. We mass produce them now in the billions, and they're worth nothing. At the time, they were hand-blown, and they were called trade beads, and they were used all over the world, sort of like Renaissance-era traveler's checks, because glass was very valuable in places where it didn't exist, like the Americas. The question posed in that first section is, what makes a stone a gem? Because they're all just rocks, really. Some of them aren't even rocks, like amber. It's just fossilized resin. You can actually melt it. What makes a stone a gem is that other people don't have it, that it's rare, that it excites you when you see it. And that was true of glass beads.
And this takes me to another story in the book that I love, the wristwatch, because that's another piece of jewelry that was born out of the desire to have something that no one else had, right?
That's one of my favorite stories, the first wristwatch. There was a Hungarian countess who needed something that would make a splash. And there were rules. There was a pecking order about how big your diamonds can be. And so she couldn't step outside her rank, but she did have a great deal of money. And so she went to Patek Philippe, which everyone knows is one of the greatest watchmakers in the world. So she asked them, can you make me a real working clock small enough to replace the diamond in my bracelet? And back then, technology, just like now, miniaturization meant money. And this was a spectacularly expensive piece of jewelry. And it made a sensation. And over a few years, people started to obtain them, and they were called wristlets.
But you write that it's really during World War I when wristwatches become popular for men. What role did this piece of jewelry play, right, in this very important time in history?
World War I sort of went from horses and bayonets to mustard gas and machine guns almost overnight. And suddenly, it was impossible to synchronize firing with an automatic weapon with two hands and simultaneously hold pocket watches. And so during the Boer War, which came right before World War I, it was sort of an appetizer in an unseemly sense, they remembered wristlets and they snapped the fronts off and they strapped them down to their wrists. When they got home, the War Commission started looking into what were called trench watches for men. And in World War I, they were the linchpin piece of technology that allowed all the other technology to work, from timed explosives to silent synchronized firing. It does not get its due in military history, but it should.
When you kind of put down this book and you had done your research, in the end, did it make you look at any of your jewelry differently? You know, when you really broke down and dissected this idea of value, did it make you question some of the things you hold dear?
The truth only ever enhances the luster of something for me. I love being able to look at my pearls and know that that was a parasitic infection 15 years ago. I love knowing that, you know, this glass bracelet I'm wearing was the crown jewels of the Iroquois in terms of rarity. I don't find it at all diminishing to what I own. And I'm quite the jewelry hoarder, as you can imagine.
Well, Asia Radin, thank you so much for talking with us and sharing some of the stories behind these jewels.
My pleasure.
Asia Radin, her book is called Stoned: Jewelry, Obsession, and How Desire Shapes the World.